Chapter 3. Medical Treatments. There are two schools of thought on patient education. One is for the patient not to know, to care, or to worry. Let the doctor or other health professional treat and cure you. The other is to explain every aspect of the disease and treatment so the patient can understand and become an active participant, not a recipient. Today, oncologists, doctors specially trained to treat cancer, are taught the latter method. It is believed the greatest resource to cure a patient is within the patient. There is an old tale with a great moral called the wheelbarrow story. An individual carted scrap metal from machines in a plant to the junk pile hour after hour, day after day. The turnover in this position had been high, and the current employee was very slow and lethargic. The plant manager came to him one day and explained the entire process of producing their product and what an important place this individual had in continuously moving the scrap from the machine to the junk pile. He was an integral and vital cog in the entire operation. From that moment on, he did an outstanding job. I believe the same thing applies in the recovery from cancer. If we can understand the part that we are able to perform, we can help ourselves do an outstanding job in the successful treatment of our disease. It is for that reason that the following information on medical treatment is presented. It is so that you can understand what your options are, what your doctor is recommending, why it is being recommended, what it is intended to do, and how it is supposed to do it. With this information, it is hoped that your mind and your body will help the treatments do their intended job. This book could not serve you well without some discussion of alternative therapies. Even though you have cancer, you still have a good mind, and you are able to think and rationalize. You have gone through a traumatic experience being diagnosed with cancer, but that doesn't mean you have to rush into everything with blind faith and believe everything anyone says or everything you read. Use the common sense God gave you without trying to take the easy road out. There are three types of treatments that you must consider in treating cancer. First, there are conventional medical treatments, such as surgery, chemotherapy, and the other treatments described later in this chapter, of which I am completely in favor when prescribed by a qualified physician and concurred with by an independent qualified second opinion. Conventional medical treatments always come first and foremost in treating cancer. Second are termed complementary, such as prayer, relaxation, imagery, and diet, which means methods of treatment that are used in addition to conventional medical treatments. I am completely in favor of any and all complementary forms of treatment, as long as your physician says they will not specifically harm you or interfere with whatever medical treatments you are taking. Third are alternative therapies, methods of treatment used instead of conventional medicine. I am totally and unequivocally opposed to any form of alternative treatments. Sometimes you may hear a person describing a treatment as unorthodox. In my opinion, that term should not be used. It merely indicates the person using it is unfamiliar with the treatment and trying to discourage its use, even though it might be helpful to the particular patient. In fact, sometimes this term is applied to legitimate experimental therapy. In the first half of the 20th century, anyone being cured of cancer would only have done so with surgery. Therefore, to most surgeons, any method of treatment other than surgery, such as radiation, chemotherapy, relaxation, or prayer, was unconventional. Today, the majority of cancer patients are treated with combinations of therapies in order to achieve the highest cure rates possible. The critical thing is to differentiate between alternative and complementary treatments. Use your head and you will have no problem figuring out which is which. Everything recommended in this book is complementary. It is in addition to whatever your qualified physician recommends. Some people don't like the prospect of taking an unpleasant medical treatment. Perhaps some doctor told them there was nothing medically that could be done, and they failed to seek a second opinion. A human being will not be denied hope. They get oversold on a complementary therapy and use it to the exclusion of medical treatments. Then this complementary therapy becomes an alternative therapy. It goes from something wonderful, something that can help save your life, to something terrible, something that can most certainly cost you your life. Stay far, far away from alternative therapies because they can kill you by denying your access to the treatments that thousands of scientists have developed and perfected over the years. Believe in and use every complementary therapy that your physician says cannot hurt you. It is your life, and if you don't do everything possible to help yourself, no one else will. There are numerous commonly used treatments for cancer, many of which could be successful if used individually, but often are proved more successful when used in combination. I personally had radiation therapy, chemotherapy, surgery, immunization therapy, and a year of adjuvant chemotherapy in addition to psychotherapy. The cure rate for patients with advanced Hodgkin's disease was increased from 54% to 84% by giving combination chemotherapy in an alternating pattern, demonstrating the complexities within a single type of therapy. We shall discuss several of the more common medical treatments. We have all heard war stories about various treatments for cancer and how horrible they are. I had 5 of the more common treatments. Prior to that, I was told I was terminal, that nothing could be done, and that there was no hope. I lived for 5 days without hope. I want to go on record as stating that any single minute without hope is worse than all the treatments I went through. These horror stories were probably true in your parents' or grandparents' time. Today, these treatments, when administered by qualified professionals, are scientific, not guesswork. Doctors know exactly how much of anything can be given to you safely to do exactly what is supposed to be done and probably what the side effects or residual effects will be. By far, the greatest progress in cancer treatments has been made in recent years. Many cancers once thought to be untreatable are not only treatable, but continue to increase in survival rates by using current therapies. At an annual review meeting of the National Cancer Advisory Board, Dr. Alan Rabson, Director of the Division of Cancer Biology and Diagnosis, referring to scientific highlights and discoveries, stated, "It has been one of the most exciting years during my lifetime." Dr. Lloyd Old of Memorial Sloan Kettering, one of the most respected cancer specialists in the U.S., said there had been more progress made in the cancer field in the last several months than in the previous 25 years he had been in research. Dr. Vincent T. DeVita, Jr., former director of the National Cancer Institute, stated, "The pace at which science is moving is so exciting that the fear is not being able to keep up between the laboratory and the clinic." People were burned with radiation therapy years ago. Today, there is no excuse for this. Some people were poisoned with drugs. My recollection is that in an article several years ago in the Washington Post, the reporter was able to locate some 6 drug-related deaths nationally. They showed a picture of an infant superimposed over her death certificate, stating this child was killed by drugs. What dramatic journalism. These 6 deaths were out of some 200,000 people who received chemotherapy that year. If you compare the risk to the reward, there is no comparison. In my opinion, that article, by frightening people away from the proper treatment, killed more people than drugs would for many, many years. Some 20 years ago, a radical mastectomy was the treatment of choice for breast cancer. Now it is rarely an option. Relatively no one should die from testicular cancer today. Many say the greatest advances have been made in childhood cancers. Be grateful that dedicated doctors and scientists discovered the treatments and perfected them so you are able to receive the benefits of them. Only a few years ago, this was not possible. Because many people died previously, maybe you have a chance of beating cancer. Do everything your qualified doctor recommends to help save your life. Surgery. In the latter part of the 20th century, surgery was given credit for 60% of those cured from cancer. Radiation therapy was credited for 25% and chemotherapy 15%. You can see from these statistics, if you had a tumor that was surgically removable, your case had an optimistic outlook. But don't get the wrong impression. In the early part of the 20th century, surgery was the only option. Therefore, surgery's cure rate of 60% was a reduction from 100% a short time before. Today, most patients receive a combination of cancer therapies, which results in much better success rates. Don't confuse inoperable with incurable. Maybe they sound somewhat alike, but they don't mean anything similar. I was inoperable, and here I am writing this book. Inoperable means that at the moment, in the opinion of the doctor who is examining you, it cannot be operated on. It does not mean that you cannot be successfully treated without surgery. Also, it does not mean that the other treatments could not make you operable. In my case, radiation and chemotherapy reduce the size of the tumor to make it operable. In addition, it does not necessarily mean that another surgeon with more experience or skills could not successfully perform the surgery. Surgery, other than for taking a biopsy or debulking a tumor, is generally used in cancer treatment only when it can cure a patient or solve a particular problem, such as a stopped-up colon or ureter. Therefore, if surgery cannot benefit a patient, it would not be considered the treatment of choice. Other options should be examined. Furthermore, in my personal opinion, while surgery is properly given credit for many of those cured from cancer, I believe that failure to give additional treatments prior to or following surgery is responsible for many of the deaths from cancer. That is why I urge every patient to receive a qualified second opinion prior to any treatment or to confirm with a board-certified oncologist the surgeon's statement that no further treatments are necessary. Surgery may be the most frequently used initial treatment, but at the beginning of an NCI presentation on improving surgery in the 1980s, we were given a note of caution in the form of a quotation from an eminent surgeon. There must be a final limit to the development of manipulative surgery. The knife cannot always have fresh fields for conquest, and although methods of practice may be modified and varied, and even improved to some extent, it must be within a certain limit. That this limit has nearly, if not quite, been reached. It will appear evident if we reflect on the great achievements of modern operative surgery. Very little remains for the boldest to devise or the most dexterous to perform. This quote is from Sir John Ericsson and was published in Lancet, a leading British medical publication, on June 15, 1863. Chemotherapy. Once the black sheep of cancer treatments, chemotherapy has become the leading weapon for increasing the number of patients who can be cured of cancer. At the same time, researchers are reducing the debilitating side effects that chemotherapy patients have typically had to endure. When chemotherapy was developed in the 1950s, cancer statistics were pretty much static, observed Dr. Bruce Chabner, former head of the National Cancer Institute's Division of Cancer Treatment. Surgery had gone as far as it could go in curing local disease, and the radiation therapy of the 1960s and 70s only improved the cure of local and regional disease. Unfortunately, at the time of diagnosis, about half of cancer patients already have spread of their disease beyond their original site, and the only therapy that has made inroads against these cancers is chemotherapy. Now hundreds of thousands of patients with cancer who cannot be cured by surgery or radiation are being saved each year using chemotherapy. As late as the 1980s, chemotherapy cured just a few thousand patients annually. Discoveries of ways to improve the effectiveness of drugs and overcome resistance to them, as well as better understanding of how cancer cells spread to other parts of the body, have produced new treatment tactics that further increase drug cures and extend chemotherapy to common cancers that had not been vulnerable to its effect. The prognosis for patients with disseminated malignancy has improved considerably, Dr. Chabner said. Especially notable is the increase in long-term disease-free survival time for patients with testicular cancer and childhood leukemia from 10% in 1973 to 96% in 2007. Similarly, the response rate for patients with ovarian cancer, stages 1 and 2, has risen from 30% in 1973 to 90% for stage 1 and 85% for stage 2 in 2007. Further improvements in the efficacy of chemotherapy are expected to be attained with the refinement of high-dose chemotherapy, regional chemotherapy, bone marrow transplantation, the use of colony-forming assays to predict response, the use of combinations of genetically developed drugs, and the development of targeted therapies. The new chemotherapy approaches are increasing the damage done to cancer cells and diminishing effects on normal tissue. Oncologists are also better able to control the occasional side effects of nausea and vomiting. Currently, few patients experience any nausea at all. The importance of drugs is universally acknowledged now that cancer specialists realize the disease is systemic, or body-wide, not confined to one site or tissue. In such cases, only treatments like drugs that can reach the nooks and crannies of the body wherever cancer cells may be hiding can be successful. Cancer cells lose their ability to control their own growth. Normal cells know when to stop growing. If half of your liver is removed in an operation, for example, your liver will grow back. Once local repair is complete, growth stops. Something happens to cancer cells so that they lose their ability to respond to the body's signal to stop growing. They become wild, erratic cells that keep multiplying. By themselves, cancer cells are not usually destructive, but they keep proliferating in the body so that they eventually crowd out the normal tissue of organs. That's what kills the patient. If the cancer is in the lungs, for example, the eventual replacement of healthy tissues by malignant cells interferes with breathing. Many of the drugs and biological agents now being used are aimed at interfering with cancer cells' reproduction rather than destroying them. In a sense, we want to give cancer cells the correct signal to stop growing and behave like normal cells. The drugs fall into several main categories. Alkylating agents. The DNA of a cell is made up of a chemical basis that must be duplicated and precisely paired when the cell divides. Alkylating agents interfere with this, so the cell dies. Cytoxin is one of the alkylating agents. Anti-metabolites. These drugs resemble nutrients that the cell needs. When these chemicals are used to build DNA and other cell structures, DNA made with the chemotherapy does not work correctly, therefore causing the cell to die. Such agents include methotrexate, F5U, and 6-mercaptopurine, or 6-MP. Antibiotics. Some of these were discovered in research for new drugs to fight infections. They disrupt the synthesis of RNA, a substance the cell needs to make DNA. Two leading antibiotics in cancer therapy are bleomycin and adriamycin. Plant alkaloids. Vincristine, vinblastine, and vinorelabine are derived from the periwinkle plant. They prevent the cell from reproducing by disrupting it during cell division. Taxol is made from the bark of the Pacific yew tree and taxotere from the leaves of the Pacific yew tree. They are in a category called the taxanes. Taxanes work by disrupting the dividing cell. Steroids. It isn't precisely known how hormones such as dexamethasone and prednisone work against cancer. They are believed to affect cell wall permeability. Topoisomerase inhibitors. Topoisomerase is an enzyme that helps DNA during cell division by fixing the breaks in the DNA strand. Topoisomerase inhibitors block that. The DNA strands cannot reform and the cells die. Drugs in this category include topotecan and irinotecan. Tyrosine kinase inhibitors. These small molecules get into the cell and stop it from growing by shutting off the receptors on the cell surface. Drugs in this category include Gleevec, Tarceva, Ticerb, and Sprycel. Anti-angiogenesis. These are drugs that block angiogenesis, the development of new blood vessels. Solid tumors cannot grow beyond the size of a pinhead, 1 to 2 cubic millimeters, without new blood vessels to supply the nutritional needs of the tumor. Without new blood vessels, the tumor supply of oxygen and nutrients are cut off. It cannot grow and spread to other parts of the body. Drugs in this category include Avastin, Sutent, and Nexavar. Pharmaceutical companies are developing new medicines to fight cancer, including gene therapies, antibodies, and new classifications of medicines, all weapons in the high-tech, high-stakes war against cancer. Many people expect worse side effects from chemotherapy than actually occur. Your doctor must, and rightfully so, warn you of all the possible side effects that have happened to anyone taking that particular drug. Many patients are able to work and perform most of all of their normal activities while receiving chemotherapy. Radiation therapy. As a result of technical advances in training programs, radiation oncology has developed into a highly refined specialty. Now, with superb accuracy, a radiation beam can be focused on the tumor without damaging surrounding normal tissue. Use of very high-intensity beams, many times the dose of earlier machines, can provide deeper penetration and a more precise beam that does less damage to healthy cells. By itself, as well as in combination with other therapies, radiation therapy is an increasingly potent tool. Radiation therapy, in contrast to what many people imagine, does not destroy or dissolve cancer cells like a laser beam would. Possibly, if the dose were multiplied many, many times, it would. However, it is given in such small doses that its prime mission is to damage the DNA of a malignant cell. The cell does not die instantly, but when it tries to divide, it is unable to and dies at that time. Therefore, radiation treatments continue to be effective on the tumor after the treatments are completed, often for 90 days and more. Sometimes, tumors shrink primarily after the therapy is finished. Radiation treatments are normally given 5 days a week, not because the doctors don't like to work on the weekends or have a strong union, but because during the other 2 days, normal healthy cells will repair the damage done to their DNA. Cancerous cells are unable to repair this damage. Because scar tissue will continue to build up, changes could be noticed in follow-up x-rays, even though the tumor is gone. Also, no changes may be noticed in a bone scan for some time, even though the radiation did its job, because the bone mending itself after radiation will give the same image as a tumor on a scan. Immunization therapy. Some of the most exciting possibilities are offered by drugs that work in entirely different ways from the original three conventional treatments: surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. One such approach is immunization therapy, using drugs that cause the body's immune system to attack cancer just as it fights off infections. The concept is based on two theories. First, cancer cells can be perceived by the immune system as foreign and, with proper help, rejected. The second is that cancer victims have lost their natural powers of rejection because of their debilitating disease, so boosting their immune system will help them. The widely publicized drug, interferon, stemmed from immunological research. Discovered in the 1950s, it is a protein produced by body cells to help fight off viral infections. In cancer, researchers think it fastens onto cells and causes the release of enzymes that inhibit growth. And, because it is a natural substance, experts hope the side effects would be limited. The side effects are now known to be fatigue and mild hair loss. Until the late 1980s, large-scale testing of interferon was not possible because it could be extracted only in minute quantities and at great cost from donated white blood cells. The emergence of recombinant DNA technology, in which common bacteria can be programmed genetically to manufacture quantities of proteins, has made it possible to obtain enough interferon for cancer research. On December 5, 1985, the New England Journal of Medicine carried a story on Dr. Steve Rosenberg's treatment of interleukin-2 combined with LAK cells. That started a torrent of publicity throughout the winter of 1985 through 1986. Simply stated, this treatment took the natural killer cells from a patient's blood, treated them with IL-2, and re-injected them and more IL-2 back into the patient. These IL-2 armed white cells, called LAK, or lymphokine-activated killer cells, destroy tumors for months after administration in some cases, until the patient is clear of detectable cancer. Only patients who had failed all other treatments were accepted for this protocol. The success in reducing tumor burden by 50% or more was striking in several types of advanced cancer. In February 1986, we received a report that Dr. Rosenberg had been successful in 100%, 6 out of 6, of the cases of renal cell cancer, and 50%, 5 out of 10, of the cases of advanced malignant melanoma. Both of these types of cancers are relatively untreatable using other methods of treatment if surgery failed. The most exciting aspect of this treatment, to me, is that IL-2 is not intended to harm the malignant cells. It is solely to stimulate the patient's own immune system, which in turn destroys the cancer. Surgery, radiation, or chemotherapy, the methods of treatment most physicians are used to discussing and fighting cancer, are each designed to damage malignant cells in their own way. The mere concept of IL-2, as well as the success of the treatments, emphasize the importance of the patient's immune system. Since 1986, this form of therapy has been used in fighting cancer. It seems that there are a number of substances that occur naturally in the body to maintain normal growth and development, which may be utilized to stimulate the body's natural defenses against cancer. The National Cancer Institute has established a special research program to explore intensively the therapeutic applications of these naturally occurring substances called biological response modifiers. Hyperthermia. This is the process of heating a tumor approximately 10 degrees Fahrenheit. Hyperthermia can magnify the benefits of chemotherapy or radiation therapy several fold without much downside risk. It is generally done with a microwave-type mechanism. This in of itself is capable of killing certain types of cancers. It can be done by warming a chemotherapy agent and bathing the tumor bed. This is called intraoperative hyperthermia. Radiofrequency ablation is another form of hyperthermia done by inserting a special needle into a tumor. The physician is guided in the placement of the needle by images from an imaging machine, such as a CT scanner. Once the needle is in place, tines are deployed from the hollow core of the needle. These tines penetrate and envelop the tumor. RFA energy is then sent through the needle and tines, destroying the tumor. Hormonal manipulation. The art of treating certain cancers by denying needed hormones, hormonal manipulation is normally one of the more pleasant treatments, as it is non-toxic and has very minimal side effects. The possibility of its use is tested for regularly in breast cancer. If applicable, it is certainly a treatment of choice and can be used along with other forms of therapy. A pathologist described it in a fascinating way. A malignant cell is examined and found to be estrogen or progesterone positive, meaning it is dependent on those substances for survival. There is a door on the side of each malignant cell that opens to allow those substances to enter. By giving a certain pill, those doors are sealed shut, and the malignant cells are deprived of this hormone they need to survive and divide and are killed. Photodynamic therapy. This was developed at Roswell Park Memorial Institute in Buffalo, New York, in the early 1970s. A non-toxic drug, HPD, is injected and is absorbed by all cells. It sensitizes these cells to light. About 3 days later, an intense laser light is shined directly on the tumor, producing high-powered singlet oxygen inside the cell, so reactive that it destroys the cancerous growth. Since the light can only penetrate 5 to 10 millimeters, it does not work well on treating thick or deep-seated tumors. It appears to work best on early to middle-stage cancers of the esophagus, lung, bronchi, and bladder. The use of photodynamic therapy is increasing dramatically in many major cities, but it is still generally considered an experimental therapy. Monoclonal antibodies. They target a single receptor on a cell. These drugs, when they bind to the cell, program the cell to die or mark it for destruction by other cells. The surfaces of viruses, bacteria, and even normal cells contain specific molecules that are called antigens. When they enter the body, these antigens, or T cells, fighter cells, trigger the B cells, also fighter cells, which then turn into an antibody-producing factory. Antibodies attach to the invading cells, causing their destruction. All vaccines are made from antigens that induce the formation of antibodies in advance to ward off infectious diseases. First, researchers inject a mouse with an antigen, for example, a human cancer cell. The mouse then makes antibodies to different components of the cancer cell, including abnormal proteins associated with cancer itself. The investigator removes the mouse's spleen, where much of the antibody production occurs, and extracts its cells. They then fuse these cells with myeloma cells. These tumor cells are used because they are immortal. They will continue to divide ad infinitum and make the fused hybrid do the same. Finally, the scientists select the hybrid cells that are producing the particular antibodies they want and encourage them to reproduce, or clone, in separate tissue cultures. All of this is done in the laboratory. The products are called monoclonal antibodies because each comes from a single line, or clone, of cells. Special antigens can be found on some cancer cells that are not present on normal cells. These lab-produced antibodies home in on the tumors like heat-seeking missiles while ignoring normal tissue. The antibodies can be tagged with radioactive substances or chemicals to carry lethal doses directly to cancer cells while bypassing normal cells. Doctors tag these antibodies with radioisotopes and scan the whole body for individual clusters of cancer cells that cannot be detected with current methods. When the antibodies connect to cells, the radioisotope is unlocked, causing a bigger cell death. Gene therapy. Gene therapy has a particular potential application to cancer because there is a strong genetic basis to many cancers. Cancers often grow and spread because of the mutations in their genes. The cancer cells' mutations may make them invisible to the immune system so they can't be rejected, or the mutations may take away the growth controls built into all cells, resulting in their uncontrolled growth. Gene therapy puts genes into cancer cells to make them stimulate the immune system or to restore growth control. Another approach is to put genes into the body's white blood cells to make them effective killers of the patient's cancer cells. Gene therapies are no longer experimental. Gleevec rearranges the chromosomes, getting rid of the Philadelphia chromosome that causes chronic myelogenous leukemia. Herceptin and Tarceva target the epidermal growth factor receptor, shutting off stimulation of the nucleus so that the cell stops reproducing. Avastin targets vascular endothelial growth factor receptors, making it impossible for the tumor to stimulate growth of blood vessels. There are many new drugs in the pipeline that target genes or intracellular structures to stop the growth of cancer. I would like to tell a story for the sake of the cancer patient looking for proper help. They say a picture is worth 10,000 words, and this brief story is a graphic picture. A friend was unexpectedly diagnosed with a very serious cancer of the sinuses at an outstanding institution. The surgeon, who had done the biopsy and removed all the tumor mass possible originally, upon learning the cell pathology, stated that the only hope was for extremely radical surgery with pre-op or post-op radiation. The patient went to a second institution for a second opinion from a noted surgeon. There, he was told that radiation would not help and much more radical surgery than he had been led to expect would be necessary, nearly obliterating his face, if there was any hope of saving his life. Being totally unnerved, he went back to the first institution for a consultation with the radiation therapist. Here, he was told that the surgery was far too dangerous and his only hope was in radiation therapy, which could be very damaging. Then, he went to a third institution where a medical oncologist, radiation therapist, and surgeon sat down together with the patient after numerous additional tests were performed. Jointly, they worked out the possibility that a very low dose radiation could be given over 5 weeks fairly safely, compared to the high dose that had been proposed, followed by surgery from the top of the head, causing minimal appearance damage. However, the head and neck surgeon wanted a neurosurgeon present for that part of the operation. I know none of this firsthand. It has all been told to me by the patient and his wife directly. Maybe none of it is what he was told. That doesn't make any difference. It is definitely what he understood. Obviously, he chose the latter institution. He chose the physicians who did not feel they knew more about other methods of treatments than the specialists in those methods. He wanted doctors who were open to the suggestions of others and who sought and wanted the assistance of specialists in fields other than their own. All this gave him hope, which helped his mental attitude and gave him a strong desire to fight and live. The result of his search and the subsequent teamwork shrank the tumor with radiation to a point where it could be removed with adequate margins and no facial disfigurement. Articles in local publications or media announcing gigantic breakthroughs in cancer should be viewed with skepticism and not allowed to raise false hopes or doubts. Generally, these can be checked out easily by calling 800-4-CANCER, the Cancer Information Service at the National Cancer Institute. Major breakthroughs, if publicly announced, would be important enough to make all the major wire services. You would hear about them on all the radio and TV news programs, as well as in newspapers and magazines. The following is from an article in Good Housekeeping by Dr. Alan E. Norse about what you can do to avoid being taken in by cancer quackery. First, I think it is important to recognize what really is being done by modern medical science, slow as the progress may appear. Research are piecing together an immensely complicated puzzle, and progress is slow precisely because the puzzle is so intricate. To discover why a normal cell goes wrong and how to stop the process, we have to understand some of the most basic processes of life itself. But, bit by bit, the answers are coming in. Second, we should bear in mind that even though a magic bullet against cancer may not be found, more and more kinds of cancer are being cured, and the list of known effective treatments is lengthening. Third, knowing what we do about the dedication and integrity of most medical scientists, we should be suspicious of anyone who claims that researchers are deliberately hiding valid cancer cures from the public. But most important of all, we should use some plain good judgment. When you hear about a new cancer remedy that sounds simple and easy and that you can handle largely by yourself, recognize it for what it is. If it sounds too good to be true, it almost certainly is not true.